We are the mothers of many, Kiara Evans and Lorna Blanchard. As mothers of many children, we are curious about our parenting journeys. We were called to document this poignant time of mothering in our lives. We feel passionately that women's stories should be heard.
Be nice.
Suffering. Part two.
Suffering part two. Yeah, well, we ended last week and then carried on talking for quite a long time, didn't we, about more suffering and martyrdom. And so we just wanted to keep talking. You said you've had lots of thoughts this week. Did you write them down?
I didn't write them down. I thought about writing them down. What?
Yeah,
I did write. I've written a couple of things down. The problem is, isn't it, with all those kids, is that you think you're going to write something down and then just never have a pen near you or whatever, or you're just not in the right room or whatever, like in the wrong notebook. What I wrote down was something about the village, which I think we can go into a bit, chat about. There's often this like discussion of the village. Most people listening probably have heard that before. And also I wrote down the mental emotional load of mothering as part of, I guess, where I feel that I suffer sometimes. The physical load, I would say, is dependent on where I'm at physically myself. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Like I feel like if I have an abundance of energy, the physical load doesn't feel like too much.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
But when I had like a small baby and I was baby wearing all day, I felt the physical load to be too much because my body was hurting from carrying like a giant baby. If anyone's met Autumn, you know what I mean. And my body, I don't do any like intentional core strengthening, which probably would have helped, but anyway, so that felt like a lot then. I wouldn't say that the physical load now feels as much of a suffering trigger for me. I would say that the mental emotional load can be more so. I don't know, what do you think? Is that what you see when you look in at what I'm saying?
I just wonder how much of suffering of motherhood, and I think definitely I resonate with the emotional and mental load side of things at the moment. Of, I guess that's where I find it very difficult. It's really hard to be the emotional filler-upper and the emotional punching bag and the emotional everything, emotional load bearer of the family, then without the village, which we don't really have. And that feels heavy. I don't know if that feels like suffering, but it feels really heavy at the moment.
What do you think, like on practical terms, what do we mean by the emotional load and the emotional weight bearer? Like, what, give me some like practical, give everyone, including me, some practical examples of that in situ.
Yeah. The how everyone is first thing in the morning. Like I'm the one downstairs first thing in the morning, and Anna walks into the kitchen and she just bumps into me, like her whole body, she bumps into me and just leans on me. And is generally like pissed off with the world because she's awake. Bethany is stomping around the house because it's the morning and she hates mornings. And her whole energy feels like, this is your fault, mother. And because you're making me go to school, she's got much better. We've had lots of conversations, but that energy is exuded and I have to absorb it to try and diffuse the situation. Then Luke will come downstairs in some disarray because he's Luke and just is like bumbling, and that's an energy I've got to kind of cope with and deal with. And then Samuel appears and then I'm ready to kind of put out fires at this point, because Samuel, God love Samuel, he's 10. I think he's 10. I've got no idea. And he tries to be funny. He tries to sort of be funny and say something funny, but it just sort of lands really badly with the others first thing in the morning. So then everyone starts to like piss each other off and shout at each other, and Bethany will get in the way and tell someone. And like, so that's what you know, that's 20 minutes into the day. Ooh, the emotional load is heavy. And I don't know whether or not is it my job? Is it my job to be the emotional load bearer of all of that stuff? I kind of feel like it is, because I kind of feel like part of my job is to allow my children their emotional dysregulation and to help them regulate, right? And mm-hmm. who isn't emotionally dysregulated first thing in the morning when you've been woken up by an alarm or woken up by someone saying it's time to get up? It's cold, it's dark, you know, you're confronted with horrible physical feelings of I'm tired and I'm cold and there's bright lights and it's just like everything's dysregulating first thing, isn't it? And then you're kind of looking to the person who is your regulator, me, and going, regulate me! But not being able to say that, you're just going, rah! At everyone else in the house. Yeah.
So what kind of like time are we talking about here? This like 6 a.m., yeah? Ish, between 6 and 7.
Between 6 and 7. This is all between 6 and 7. So I get up. I tend to get up before 6. I take the dog for a walk. And then I come back in and it's then bam. Who's up? Who's ready to vomit their emotion all over me?
Yep. And would you say that they all come to you first thing in the morning to tell you how they feel?
Yeah. Which on the one hand is amazing. Like I want that. I really want that. I guess I invite that. And on the other hand, when you said about the physical side of things, you know, when you're physically sore, I guess when I'm, you know, last night I didn't go to bed until quite late, so I'm tired. So now I need to approach the day not dysregulated to be able to regulate all of them. And then when I am dysregulated because I'm tired or because I'm hungry or because of whatever's going on, it's like compounds it all. And then I don't feel very able to cope with being the emotional regulator. And that's when I feel like suffering happens for me. Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about what you're saying about regulating them. So the way I have approached this situation is that I don't see it as me regulating them as such, but more the children have their emotions. And my job is to be the pillar in the middle that is the force around me is so protected that they can have whatever emotion they want on the outside of that, but it doesn't permeate into my force field.
And is that then giving them strength?
Them,
because you're stable.
Well, then that allows them the space to be able to work through it next to me, but I don't take on what they're going through. That's when I'm in a good place. So when I'm in a regulated place myself, like when my force field is active and it is, you know, bolstered up by nourishment or peace or whatever it is I've needed, if I've met my needs and my force field has been nourished in whatever way, even if I've just like thought about it, sometimes I've done some emotional healing, some energetic healing work, and that's with Miriam Burrell. We need to mention her on one of our podcasts. Yeah. But we talked about the force field. She might not refer to it that's what I've called it, like feel the force, Luke, like
yeah.
My force. And I just sometimes picture it now of like, okay, let's create this barrier between whatever big emotion it is on the outside that other person, because I think that because mothers and children are so emotionally entwined because of how we've brought them up, I guess, in some ways, like breastfed them, held them, been around them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's mine and your situations. Our connection to each other is so strong that force field is permeated like so easily for me and for some of my kids more than others. So if that force field is not in any way robust, especially I find with my eldest and my third one, who are emotional by nature, really can like get straight into the core, and then I'm there with them in the drama.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Rather than being the person who is holding the space, I'm the person who's then along with them and all of what they're feeling.
Having some panic. Yeah. Okay, here's my follow-up question to this. The bit that my brain's going, I don't understand how to do this. What's the difference? Okay, basically I'm thinking of how I was parented. And what's the difference between having, you know, being that strong pillar with your force field that means that people can be safe to express their feelings around you without being, you know, shields down to 0% kind of thing, versus disconnection? I guess to me, I don't actually know how to do put up a force field, have boundaries without disconnecting. And I think because my mum totally just disconnected, there was a numbness. Like her force field, her boundary was numbness, right? So she was, and I know that for me, when I get into a bad headspace with my kids, it's numbness, where I just like go, do you know what? I feel there's too much feeling going on. There's too much emotion here. I'm going to have to switch off the emotion chip because I can't cope. And it becomes numb rather than a boundary. And I feel like they're two different things. So how do you do that without disconnecting? Especially as you said about connection, I was like, how do you do it without disconnecting?
Okay. So for me, the disconnection is, can you just come back when you finished having that emotion? Can you just like either stop or go away? And when you're done, like we'll reconnect.
Yeah.
For me, connection is, I'm going to be here for you whilst you're experiencing that emotion. I can hold your hand. I can sit with you. I can hold the space for you. I can be around you, and I'm still going to love you, but I am not going to enter the emotion with you.
Yeah.
Because when I enter the emotion with you, we're both suffering.
Yeah.
If it's one that feels like suffering, you know, like if, and this is where it can sometimes for me get a bit confusing, because I'm like, well, then when there's joy and happiness and excitement, sometimes you want to get involved with that, right? Which I don't think is a bad thing to all be high together, but my role as a leader is then to go, oh, that's got too exciting. Okay, because I'm the leader. We're leaders in our family, like,
yeah,
in that is, as parents we are a leader. We don't have to be a boss and we don't have to be a dictator, but we are a leader because we have excuse me while I say this, after the days I've had recently, we have developed emotional brains. Okay, some of us are working towards regulating our own emotions so that we can give to others. Should we say it that way instead?
I might just have to cut this bit out.
Don't cut it out. It's true.
Oh my gosh. Like,
the thing is, I know that what I am doing. So a child does not know what they are doing when they are in a rage or when they are overstimulated or when they're overexcited. As much as I would like to think that they know what they are doing when I'm not in a good place and it feels like very much an attack on my senses, they don't know how to like what's reasonable and what is not reasonable on societal levels. Okay, so I guess if you go down the child expression route, everything is reasonable and you can have as many emotions as you want all of the time, but I can't live like that. I feel like I have to have some firmer boundaries around like how big we can express things, because if all of my children expressed their emotions as massively as they probably would do without any conditioning, it would probably finish me off. So I think often my tactic, I suppose, is to be, when I'm regulated, is to say, okay, I can hear that you are really upset about this. I'm not going to stop you from being upset about this, but I'm going to need to leave for a minute so that I don't join you in whatever emotion you're experiencing, because I'm finding the noise really difficult right now. If you need me, I'm going to be in there or whatever. So it's like, it's so nuanced, isn't it? Depending on what situation you're in, where you're at, where they're at, how many times it's happened that day.
Yeah.
So many different things going on. But for me, it's about that force field and the rooting of me. And I've drawn this picture, right? As I'm talking, there's a big circle, the roots of a tree coming out the bottom and all these like happy flowery bits at the top of this, like, in the core of me is my force field, or around my aura, whatever you want to refer to it as. And then on the outside is everybody else. And for me, as soon as all of those emotions start permeating into my core, I'm then dysregulated.
Wow.
And suffering.
I've written notes. Oh my gosh, so many key points I feel like here. Okay, the first one, I want to just reiterate what you just said, which perhaps feels more profound than it should do for me. A child doesn't know. Everything they are feeling is reasonable for them. I mean, like, I just feel like that's the most profound thing ever, because I think I have spent a huge amount of my life going, being told I'm unreasonable. Definitely as a child, I was unreasonable to feel anything. And then as an adult, being unsure, like on a permanent basis, am I being reasonable? So, well, I said, I text you on Sunday morning and went, okay, I had a full on panic the day before on Saturday. And when I say full on panic, I mean, like, I was so not okay. And it was because, I'm laughing, it's not funny, we bought a sofa, and we bought a sofa off Facebook Marketplace, which is wonderful because it was going cheap. The people that had it were really lovely, able to deliver it. It's exactly what we wanted for not the £1,000 that we were going to have to spend on a new sofa for one that wasn't going to quite work anyway. And in my head, I was panicking because I thought it smelt funny. And so I don't think it does. Like, I really don't think it does at all. And in my, I lost my mind. Like, I properly lost my mind and went to a very dark place of, I went pale, I went shaky, I couldn't stop my hands from moving, I couldn't be near anybody. To the point where there's stuff all over our house, we'd move things out of the kitchen, and I blocked myself off from my husband, from CJ, coming near me, because I'm just going to stand behind all this stuff because I can't have, I was losing my mind because I was just like in this completely irrational sense of, oh my God, the sofa smells funny, therefore I've done something, I've invited toxins into the family, all the family are going to get ill because of what I've done, but we can't afford to buy a different one, like all the things. It all felt very irrational, and yet probably what was happening was a fairly rational set of behaviors based on my worries, like my childlike worries. And I think so, yeah, like my constant battle is, am I being irrational? And most of the rest of the world goes, yeah, you're being irrational. And actually then we say that to our kids, right? You're being irrational. And I'll say this to CJ, is she being irrational? Is she being a dick? You know what, whichever kid it is, are they just being really actually probably it is a completely rational response for what they're going through. I think that's really profound and helpful.
Also, wherever you're at will depend on how much you feel like they're being a dick or not, right? Well, it is for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so then the next things that were coming up that I wrote down were, when you said about being your role as a leader, it just made me kind of think, gosh, a leader is just that step back, right? They are that pillar. They have got that force field around them where they have got to be unshakable. And the only way to be a successful leader is if you do all the things that you mentioned. You are nourished and regulated in whatever that means for you, and not at the point of burnout or collapse or complete emotional dysregulation the whole time. And goodness gracious, that's exceptionally hard as a mother to achieve that. But I think it's almost like identifying and going, okay, take a deep breath and go, I'm the leader in this situation. So have I looked after myself? Because there's absolutely fuck all else. No one else is going to do that for you. That's your job. Your job is the leader. So no one else is going to say, hey, mum, have you? Mm-mm-mm. No, that's your job to do that. And so, okay. All right.
I think one thing you just said then, unshakable to me sounds too much pressure.
Oh yeah.
To say that I'm unshakable.
I like to be extreme.
you're making, like, that to me makes it harder for you. Actually, no, that makes it easier for you to fail. Yeah, by saying because for me, a leader is someone who goes, oh my God, that was a shitstorm. I just spewed all over you people. I'm so sorry. I'm going to take myself away and deal with my shit, and I will come back when I am whole again. And please forgive me because I fucked up. I think when you say, like, if anyone says a leader is someone who leads by example, great. Show all the emotions and then show how then you recover from it. So today when I pick up my children, again, I am going to say to them, I am very sorry. Mummy shouted this morning. She was not in a good place. I still don't feel in a good place. So what can we do to work together, to do this evening together, to make things easier for all of us? Because I am very close to shouting a lot of the time right now. It's got nothing to do with you. You're not making that happen. You're not affecting my emotional state. So what is it that we can do to work as a team? I'm the leader. Yeah. I'm here for you, but I'm struggling too.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I just wrote down, like, what makes a good leader / mother? And I think when you said lead by example, I then wrote down, leading by example means prioritizing self-care, prioritizing sleep, prioritizing whatever it is that you need to nourish you, the movement, the food, the friendships you have. And actually, if we do those things for ourselves, not only are we in a better place to cope with their dysregulation, we're also literally leading by example, right? We're kind of, the kids will then go, oh, hold on. We observe, maybe not in, you know, these words, but they observe that we're doing these things for ourselves, and they might do those things for themselves as well, because surely the point of teaching them emotional regulation is that they can at some point take that role on completely themselves.
Yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Isn't that the please. Dream?
Because as much as I want my, like, 25-year-olds to lean on me for things, I don't want them ringing me every 5 minutes when they get an ouchie or a boo-boo and they need stroking, emotional or physical, right? Because I don't. I'm preparing my kids for a life of independence. I want them to be independent. I don't want them to feel alone, and I don't want them to feel like they haven't got a sturdy root to come back to. But I also want them to know that they have got themselves to lean on, and they know how to do this stuff if someone else is not there to hold their hand whilst they do it.
This feels like a really, I need to write my, you know, why have I never sat down and gone, what makes a good leader? What makes a good mother? You know, what is it that I want to bring to this role? Like, maybe, I don't know. I think that's really, again, this is way more profound than perhaps it should be. But the idea that I'm actually in a leadership role, maybe because I feel ill-equipped, maybe because I never want to take on a leadership role because I think someone else might do it better than me. But actually, hello, I am. That is literally my job. I do have 4 children that look to me as their leader. Good gracious.
You're already doing it, whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah, I'm doing it whether I want to or not. And that's so interesting, because some of the times that I feel most maybe triggered / suffering is when my children are looking to me for leadership. I would definitely say they look to me for leadership and I'm floundering. Mm-hmm. When they are, and it's almost like they know that I'm floundering. And so they almost push for more. And that might mean asking me every single question under the sun, asking me for my opinion on everything. Bethany does this a lot. And I'm like, whoa. And what I'm recognizing, I had been recognizing it, but now it's sort of all coming together properly in this conversation, but that when she's a bit dysregulated, she's looking to me for leadership to help her. And her way of doing that is to kind of ask me to give her direction, ask me my opinion on things. And I think it's her way of saying, am I okay? Am I okay in this moment? And but that might be, can I have a snack? Or what do you think about this thing? Or what TV show should we watch together? Or what time should I go to bed? Or this thing's come up that I know absolutely know the answer to, but I'm going to ask you anyway to tell me what you you know. That's so interesting. My kids are literally asking for leadership.
And a good, like, so interesting about what makes a good leader. This is the kind of stuff that you just don't talk about before you have kids, right? Maybe some people do, but I definitely didn't. I didn't think about any of this. It was only, I listened to Janet Lansbury. She's a respectful parenting podcaster and book author. And she has spoken a lot about this. And sometimes when I'm triggered, I listen to her, which triggers me further, but often brings me back into this place of needing a kick up the butt to remind myself that I am the leader. No matter whether I want to be or not, I get up every day because I have to, for them and for myself, but also to fulfill that role. And it kind of sustains me to know that's why I'm doing this, because I am a person in a way that needs that purpose. Like, I look at them and go, right, I'm your leader, and I am going to do that as gently, kindly, and respectfully as possible. But what I do find sometimes with, this is a good point about the different parenting styles that you can now be sold, right? Because parenting styles, let's not beat around the bush, they are a selling tool to get people to buy things. So you may be a gentle parent and subscribe to that way of parenting, or a respectful parent, whatever you're being sold to, and that's fine, like, it's a thing. And within that, you can work out your own way of doing things, which is kind of how I always see it, that I go out for the information, I bring it in, and then I filter it through myself and go, what actually sits well in my family for me, and what do I not sit well with? And sometimes I feel like there's a lack of emotion in some of those ways of parenting. Of like, to be a gentle parent, you never shout at your kids. Well, that's instantly unachievable for me right now in the stage of life I'm at. Like, I'm trying, but it's not achievable. So I don't want to spend my life being feeling that I'm not living up to something, that I'm not doing my best, because I am bloody doing my best. Doesn't always feel that way, but I am doing my best. So when a technique, or when a style of something is devoid of human emotions, that doesn't feel good to me. I'm not saying that it's like, okay to like constantly be splurging your emotions all over your kids all the time, because that's not what good leadership is, but recognizing that I'm having them and saying to the kids that I'm having them, and then finding a healthy way of expressing them, is different to me.
I really agree with that. And I think that is a big struggle with the almost lack of nuance that's given for those kind of conversations of gentle parenting is this. And you're like, yeah, but okay. So one of the things I wrote down when you were talking about it was, one of the things that I find really triggering is when Anna is really good at doing this, when she's having a big feeling and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna help you, I hear you, and that's not enough for her, so she grabs me and she grabs my sleeve and pulls me, and that instantly makes me go from 0 to 100 to I think exactly what I said last night was, CJ, you need to come and help me, I'm gonna throw her down the stairs. I mean, I didn't. I have never thrown any of my children down the stairs. But like that, like for me, those were the words that I needed to say to communicate. Like, this has triggered me in an instant. How do you gentle parent, or conscious parent, or just be the leader that you want to be, when that force field that you're trying to have, that strength that you're trying to have, is literally physically breached? What the heck do you do then? Because I think that's the bit where I'm like, I'm floundering, I'm gonna scream, I'm gonna do something I regret, and that's not helping anybody. And actually, the result of my dysregulation at that moment was that it took Anna another hour and a half to go to sleep last night. And I finally managed to calm myself down enough to go upstairs and be like, Anna, I see that this is really hard for you to go to sleep. And sometimes it is just really hard for people to go to sleep. And we just talked through some, you know, and I literally went, what's going on for you? Yeah. Like I was, you know, and nothing. She's just overtired. Excuse me. But yeah, what do you do? What the heck do you do when someone's breaching the boundaries so much? That's, I find that really hard.
Okay, so can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
So in that instance, have you established with Anna what that boundary is for you?
No, good point, no.
So when she's pushing like that, does she know where your force field's at? Or is she like checking a lot to see if she can get in?
Yeah, I think she is, I think she's probably sensing what I said about my mum in the first part of the conversation. I think Anas is very, very good at sensing this. She senses when I've shut down. She senses when I've emotionally disconnected. And then when I'm expecting her to then go away and self-regulate, aka go to bed on your own and go to sleep on your own, at the same time as me having emotionally disconnected, that's too much for her. And she then needs to get my attention in any way she possibly can. And that for her means grabbing at me because she knows that it'll get a response. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. And does she know my boundaries are that? No. And I've definitely, the only times I've ever said to her, please don't do that, is in the moment, which no one's learning in that moment, are they? So, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And I also think there are some days when you would have said, Anna, I'm going to step out for a minute and I'm going to come back. And then there are other days when we say, I feel like I'm going to throw someone down the stairs. I'm going to vocalize that and I'm going to say it out loud. And I don't know, because I've gone into my child in that point, right? Or you have, whoever.
Yeah.
We're in our child of like, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. I've not slept. I'm really tired. And then you're in that place. And sometimes you're just in that place. Yeah. And there's a difference between saying something and doing something, right? There is a massive difference between those things. And neither are right, wrong. I mean, throwing down your kid downstairs is very much wrong. You know, but I think if we just are on this repetitive cycle of beating ourselves up for not parenting gently in the way that we've read about or the way we've seen a perfect example of somewhere, we're never going to be able to recognize some of the work that we can do, because then you just go into self-flagellation. Like, oh, I said that. So, I mean, I've said all the things, said similar to that. You know, I've said the things, and they're in times of desperation. And I feel like with four kids, you reach that point really freaking quickly sometimes.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of children there. And we've talked a lot about, you know, why we have four kids, or have we? Have we talked enough about why we have? But anyway,
we should have that conversation. Yeah,
we should have that conversation. We have four children. Like, that is the fact. We wouldn't send any of them back, and we love them all dearly. But there are four of them, and it takes us to those limits quickly because we have many, many things in a day that permeate the force field, that challenge the boundaries, that mean that we're dysregulated for some reason or another. There are four more chances that you'll be woken up in the night. There are four more chances someone will be ill. There are four more chances someone's going to want 10 snacks in a row. You know, like all these things, it's times by four. However many kids you have, you times it by another amount, don't you? So yeah, I can't remember. I've kind of got off piece of my flow now.
Don't self-flagellate. And I think self-forgiveness. Because actually, if you're just self-flagellating and just self-blaming and shitting on yourself, you're doing absolutely nothing to go back to a regulated state, right? You're just then in a shame cycle.
Yes.
And actually, for me, shame often is equated to panic. I'll panic about everything. Wow.
And actually, I was going to ask you, so then my next question was, so what did you do between the flare-up, so to speak, and the solution, which was to go and sit with Anna and you'd regulated yourself? How did you regulate yourself in between that enough to be able to go back in? Because that's huge. I think we should celebrate that. Because you could have just literally left her in that room, shut the door and said, you are going to bed by yourself, cry it out, like, I'm done. But you managed to get yourself into a place where you could re-enter the room and get her off to sleep peacefully.
Yeah. So I was trying to do the ironing. So I just kept saying to her, I'm just going to come back upstairs when I find this shirt. And she wasn't settling. So that was my normal tactic. So by the time I'd ironed, I think, two shirts and kind of run up and down the stairs a couple of times to try and settle her, I think that was enough distance for me to be able to go, do you know what? This isn't working. And I'm going to need to come up with a different solution that doesn't involve me just going, go to sleep. Because at that point, she was just lying in her bed sobbing, going, I want mummy. And I was right there. Like, she wasn't left for very long at all. She's also sick. Anyway, but I think at that point I was like, okay, this just isn't working. And I felt uncomfortable enough. I guess the guilt, the shame maybe of the lack of gentle parenting or the fact that she wasn't going to sleep peacefully was enough for me to go, oh, we're going to have to reevaluate this one, aren't we? And what was really difficult about that was that I had the other pressure. And I think, again, bless Anna, she really is highlighting these things for me. The other pressure is that Bethany wanted to do something with me. Bethany's gone, can we play cards? And I'd already had to say to Bethany, oh, I have to do the ironing tonight because I'm doing everyone's ironing on a Sunday night for the next day. Why don't we hang out whilst I'm doing the ironing? So then I've got Bethany's emotional load of mummy's let me down. That's my interpretation. Mummy's let me down. Mummy's abandoned me in this moment to try and deal with Anna. So now I'm trying to say to Anna, don't be difficult because now I've abandoned Bethany. And actually I'm back in my child. So we're all just kids going, ah, instead of having a leader. Just fascinating. And it just makes me really think, I guess, two things. One is, I'm the leader. Like, this is what I wanted. That feels quite nice, actually, almost, to kind of take on that role and be like, do you know what? Yeah, I liked being center when I was playing netball. I loved being the leader. I loved being like the person in charge of whatever thing I was doing. I'm good at that. I can be a leader. Why have I never thought about mothering as leadership? And then it makes me kind of think, okay, but then it means I've got to really look after myself to be able to be a leader. And then I think, oh God, I've got to really look after myself to be a leader. Like, why is that on me? And now I'm back in my child going,
it's not fair.
It's not fair. Why do I have to take that deep breath and make sure I've drunk enough fucking water today? It's hard, isn't it?
But let's just, okay, but I think we need to remember that we are doing things like every single day to look after ourselves. Like all the time, whether it be doing this podcast and having these therapy sessions.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is therapy today for sure. You know, it's therapy because I've got a page of notes.
Yeah, I think too, but just before we move on from that, like, I'm really interested in this one specific example, because I don't think it's like, in my perspective, I don't think it was shame that made you go back. I think maybe shame was the catalyst, but the reason you went back is because you want to do the best for your kids. And although we sometimes go a bit awry on how we get there, you could have just left her. Like, there were choices, and the choice you made, whether it was like the catalyst was shame, whatever, and you know, that may have been the driver to the thing, the actual information and the fact of the situation is that you went back and you settled her and you did what she needed, and you probably still hung out with Bethany as well.
Yeah, I did,
for a while.
I did do both of those things. Yeah.
And you put your child aside for a bit to achieve that. And I think, you know, we've been talking about suffering, and sometimes my suffering is because I haven't listened to my child for a really long
time.
Just
gonna say, I think when you said you put your child to one side, actually I think possibly even deeper than that, And actually that's really uplifting, because that is actually also true. I do genuinely want to do the best for my kids. And I think the shame or the guilt maybe that is associated with that feeling is, like you're saying, the catalyst where I'm kind of going, oh, hold on, this isn't how I want my child to feel. I think that's it. It makes me feel like skin crawly to think of my child suffering or, you know, sad. And I could have done something about that. And I know that, like, when codependent and blah, blah, all that kind of stuff. But then I was thinking, when you said put your child to one side, actually, maybe if I got into my inner child in that moment and went, hold on, that's how I felt as a kid. I felt left alone. I felt abandoned. And that's what I'm trying to prevent all the time, almost. Like, I don't, yeah, and maybe get into it. Okay, what would my inner child want? What would little me want? Okay, let's go do that then. Maybe she just needs the leader, the mother, to go sit with her for a few minutes and stroke her head and go, it's really hard to go to sleep sometimes, isn't it?
And even if you had left her, like, even if you had left her and you woke up the next day feeling shit about it, or if you didn't, like, we make these decisions based on the information we have and how much we know about ourselves and everything around us and all of the information, all the blah, blah, blah. Like, we have to just make these decisions sometimes. And some of it's like happens. I don't know a better way of saying it. Just sometimes stuff happens. Words come out sometimes, of mouths. And...
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes everything's aligned to happen in a good way. And sometimes everything's aligned in a way where you're standing there screaming, going, I'm going to throw a kid down the stairs. Yeah. 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 Both is real.
Both are real. Both happen. Yeah. And the way we look at them afterwards can be for me, where I find the most expansion in my mindset happens. Because, like, today, for example, we didn't have a good morning. I could have literally carried that through the whole day with me. I could have, and some parts of me have, but the other parts of me know that's what I'm doing. So it's not all consumed it. So I thought about numbing everything out and buying all the stuff. I was going to buy all the stuff. I was going to pop to this shop and buy this stuff. And then I was going to go to this shop and buy this stuff. And then I was going to eat all these things. And I was going to do all that just to make myself feel better. And as soon as those thoughts come in my head, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you're really angry still. My whole body was feeling really angry still. And I was like, okay, well, you're feeling really angry. That's it. No judgment. You're just there. You kind of want to know why, but you don't really know why. So let's just talk to a friend for a bit, see if that helps, or, you know.
Yeah, and I think actually in the conversation we were having earlier on was sometimes it's all very well and good coming to the let's figure out why, let's have some awareness about why. And sometimes it's actually worth just going, I'm just really angry.
Yeah.
That's really important. And it makes me think as well, like, how much do mothers not have systems in place that allows for nourishment, that allows for that to happen? And I wrote literally numbing versus nourishment. And I recognize that for myself, that if I haven't nourished enough, I am fully on the numbing train. And that sometimes might mean disconnecting from my kids and scrolling on my phone or whatever. Or took a shot of gin the other night. It didn't even help, but it did do it. You know, so then we need some kind of, if we're the leader, maybe we need to not let these things be accidental of, oh, today happened to be a good day because I happened to be able to see a friend or speak to a friend that's filled up my cup. Maybe I need to go, how do I ensure my cup is being systematically refilled throughout the day?
Yes.
What are the things I've put in place for me? Literally really small things. To make sure that I'm okay or as okay as I can be whilst being bombarded by whatever it is that's coming up for the day.
And that's what I wrote. That's why I put the village, I think, down. Yeah. Because this idea of the fact that raising children used to be a group affair. I mean, let's not pretend though that maybe all the emotional needs were there, or that it was a very different time, you know, the needs were different. So if it was talking about basic needs, then there was help with the basic needs. I think the modern situations are often a mother in a house with all the children, dealing with the emotional load. That might look slightly different, like depending on your situation. In my experience, it tends to be mothers who understand emotional expression and can be on hand to experience that with their kids. It tends to be, that's in my experience. So in the village, like if my mum is here and there are two of us, oh my God, it's a dream. It's a dream because she not only understands where I'm at for the most part, I get a reading of where she's at and we know how to tag in and out on the kids. So like my mum knows what winds me up. I know what winds her up. So we can take whichever child is experiencing whatever and we can like navigate that together. I see my mum maybe once a week. That's glorious. Like that time is easier. And I don't think it's just having another pair of hands. There's a lot of this talk of like, if I just had another pair of hands. And I think to some extent, it would be nice if I did have another pair of hands, but it doesn't ease the emotional load. My mum eases my emotional load because she understands the emotions that the children are experiencing and how to navigate it. And therefore frees me up to deal with the other children and some of the physical stuff and whatever. And that's like when that feeling of the village is created for me is when there are other people around who are presently interacting with the children's emotional states and their general personalities, you know, like what they're saying. They're engaging with them, they're like interested in them, and they want to do things with them. And let's not pretend I want to do that all the time, because I don't. Sometimes I don't want to do
that. No, but I think that's the power of the village. That's the power of having other people who want to be present with your kids, around your kids, because you don't want to be present with your kids all of the time because there's stuff to do, or you just don't want to. Well, because quite frankly, I love playing board games. You hate it. So let me play board games with your kids. You don't want to do that. That's cool. I think that's so
I'll take
powerful.
The others up the park and then we can have a cup of tea all together.
Oh my God, that right? sounds wonderful, because I hate going to the park. Yeah. I'll play board games. You go to the park. Yeah. Yes.
This is the thing. And with some friends, that is created. Like when we get together with our kids, we are both mothering, you know, and it's just, I have this with a few friends. I mean, often though, we like double the amount of kids present, so it can be a bit more tricky because when my mum's here, she comes without any kids. So, you know, it's like two adults, four kids, slightly easier. So that can be created in meetups with each other. But I'm thinking like the modern way, I guess, is how much can you pay to outsource some of this stuff? Because for me, I tried to pay someone to come round. So I did. I had a beautiful teenager come round two afternoons a week when I had, when Autumn was like that age where she was climbing everything. She was dangerous and I needed to cook dinner. So this teenager got off her school bus. She came here from 4 till 6. I gave her dinner, paid her a little bit of money, and she played with the kids. And for that amount of time, it was brilliant. But she wasn't able to engage them enough for it to be worthwhile to carry on. There wasn't enough interaction. She wasn't grown up enough or like old enough to take on the role of mother. So it became a bit more like me mothering her. Then I was like, I don't need another child. And as much as I loved having her around, I couldn't sustain that because it didn't feel like it was nourishing me enough. So that was tricky. And then, so I've tried to pay, and then you like look into nannies, for example, like, could I get a nanny to come around in the evenings and help me? No, I cannot, because that is very, very, very expensive. So it's just me then. Fine. Okay. Clubs. So the kids do some clubs, like a couple each, not very many, but then you get then you have to pick them up from the clubs, or they come back from the club extra tired. And some of the kids do the club, some of them don't do the club. So then I looked into paying someone to do the school run for me. I have offered on when I used to be on the parent WhatsApp groups for the school, please will someone pick up my kids for me, please will someone take them to school for me, I will pay you X amount a month to do that for petrol. I had one parent in the past do it. That woman has 5 kids of her own. She was the only one who offered. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm not judging anyone. I'm just saying it's so hard to create the village, even when you're putting yourself out there all the time. And I feel like I've put myself out there a lot to say, I would like to outsource some of this drudgery. Please, let's do this stuff together. I will pick up your kids. I will swap the load with you. But it just never has worked out to be that. It's always tended to then be more hassle than help. So I feel a bit stuck in that at the moment, in that space. Because after schools are, yeah, in the winter, they're long, aren't they?
Yeah, and I would say I'm really bad at creating a village. I would just, yeah.
I don't think you are. I think you create a village in your work, a really, really
well. Yeah, within my work, I definitely do. I think there's some kind of barrier for me in terms of letting other people take the emotional load of my children. I think that's probably to do with my own woundings of not wanting to abandon my children and seeing me being not present to them as being abandoning them. So that's something that I'm aware of. I'm just not quite sure how to work through that. And so I think probably I put up some barriers around people potentially being my children's village. Like, we don't really see family because I'm like, I can't cope with this. Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's really, yeah, I think we've said it a few times, a few different episodes, this whole idea of the village and the way we are living at the moment is just bonkers. There is no village, or the village is very hard to come by, or whatever. And it just feels like maybe it's another area where we have to give ourselves a bit of grace and a bit of self-forgiveness and a bit of, as you've said so many times, there's only one of me. Like, there really is only one of me, even though the ideal is to have the village. It isn't a reality, and we are trying, and it's not the reality. And actually, the pressures on families, children, mothers, it's intense. Like, as you know, as we've been sitting here, I've had, I think, 3 notifications come through from Parent Mail. Okay, so I need to go and check all of the Parent Mail stuff, and what's the next thing I need to do? I think that's a lot. So then it just takes me back to, again, like, trying to put some systems in place to make sure I'm as okay as I possibly can be, coupled with some self-forgiveness, perhaps at the end of every day, and go, oof, you did your best, and that looked like this today, or it looked like this today, you know, no judgment, and trying to lead by example again. Yeah. Oof, heavy, isn't it? And
yeah, I mean, we are talking about suffering.
This conversation? So. Yeah, why is it, like, you know, I know that CJ listens to this, and CJ, I love you dearly, but he said in the past that he can go to work and not think about the kids. Like, that's just his kind of man. I don't know if it's a man brain or if it's just him. Like, he can go. And I don't know if maybe that's because he trusts me to deal with all the stuff. But, like, this load is weighing on my heart, even though my children aren't here right now. Like, why are mothers in general? It feels like a burden on mothers at the moment to try and figure this shit out. Of, like, how do we cope with the emotional burden? How do we cope with the emotional load of everybody? How do I create this force field? How do I create these boundaries? How do I hold my children? How do I hold space for my children to have all of their stuff go on for them? Especially if there's multiple of them and they're all having feelings at the same time. Oh my goodness. It's a burden. It does feel like a burden right now on mothers.
Yeah. And, you know, CJ and Gary both go to work and know that we are caring for the children. And part of our role is that. Part of our role as leader that we picked, because we both picked it, right, to not go back to paid work. We picked that role. I think what I am still working towards, and maybe always will be, with four kids, is how within that role can I do all the nourishment? Can I protect the force field? Can I fill my cup and be able to give what I need and want to give to the kids without losing all of myself?
Yeah.
That's really heavy. That's even more heavy.
But it strikes me that perhaps if you did, if in an ideal world, we could do the things that we needed. And I think maybe we need to go back more to basics of, like, the things aren't leaving the children to do the things. They are
doing them with the children.
Doing them with the children. Yeah. Drinking, you know, my kids know that I've got special cups. Like, I have a lot. I broke a special cup the other day. It was very sad. But I get, you know, I have special cups, and I've talked about this before, like on my social media, but is it, I know it's not as simple as like just having a special cup, but I have also many different types of tea, making sure I have the different teas that I want so that when I need that moment of, that's just for me, that cup of scalding hot tea. Oh, wonderful. I'm going to drink that. And maybe that's, you know, part of it. Just the small things. What are we doing? What can we do? And I think sometimes it does have takes a conversation like this to kind of remember, okay, I'm the leader, I'm in the leadership role, so I'm gonna fill up my tea cupboard. I need to do that. That's not to the detriment of anybody else. That's actually, hey, anybody else want a cup of my nice tea? Sure. I don't know if I'm just, yeah, making it too simple, but I think sometimes things can be simple.
Yeah, it can be. It can be simple and it can be complicated, right?
Yeah.
It can be both. When you're thinking about it in the wider context, I think it's complicated, but in like very basic minute by minute terms, it can be just a case of breathing.
Breathing, and probably for me, it's sometimes get off social media, or sometimes stop listening to, ironically, parenting podcasts, but I don't think ours is quite the same. But you know, those, the podcasts or the social media, I know we talked about this a little bit last week, but the ones that kind of, it's going, we're gentle parents and you're fucking it up. When I'm in that shame cycle, that guilt and shame, it's not a good place to be.
Yeah. And I think also important to say that we're not here to solve all the problems of the world. Suffering's going to happen. Suffering happens. I was listening to something earlier that was saying that suffering happens whether you're a billionaire or not, right? Because you can be a billionaire and you can have someone close to you die. You can be a billionaire and you can have like your foot gangrene in your foot and have it fall off. Like, everything is, whatever role you have in life, whatever role you have, whatever place you have, whatever, however many kids you have, whatever situation you are in, there will be some form of suffering to endure. It's just life. And then they were talking about, on the positive side of that, they were saying that if you look at it as each moment of each day of where you can work towards the things that you want to achieve, of not dwelling on that, you know, dwelling within the suffering as much as possible and looking towards what the next step is. And that's what I think we do here and together, is like look at something from all the inside of the thing and then say, okay, so what are we doing? What are we doing with this? And that for me is comforting, because it feels like there's something next rather than this shit is hard and we're here forever.
Yeah. And I think maybe there's some difference between suffering that is just because suffering happens, like death, and that is part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is suffering. And maybe unnecessary suffering, or suffering that I've invited upon myself because I'm dysregulated and fully gone into my inner child. And so now we're going to suffer because I'm in that place.
And that's the martyr, isn't it? That's the martyrdom.
Yeah.
The suffering that isn't necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
The unnecessary suffering of mothers is martyrdom.
Yeah. And actually, there are some things that we have some agency over and some things that we don't. And I think sometimes for me, I'm so desperately trying to avoid all suffering that perhaps I lump them both in to the same box and just fear it all. And then I'm like, just meeting everything with a bit of dysregulation and a bit of, I can't suffer anymore. I can't suffer.
For me, the suffering shows up when I feel like I don't know what to do to.
Yeah.
Or why it's there.
Yeah.
So yeah, when the suffering is there, when I feel like I'm in suffering and I'm fighting it, resisting it, and two, don't understand why I keep feeling it. Why am I feeling like a martyr right now? And how do I relieve myself of it? How do I get any relief?
Because it's horrible.
This?
Yeah. And I like that. It made me think today when I was out for my run, and I was like, oh, I'm finding this a lot harder than I did last week for my long run. And then I just had to remember, I was like, oh, but you didn't sleep much last night. You got five and a half hours sleep. That's probably not enough sleep to feel good right now. And that did make me feel better in a strange way of going, oh, it makes sense that this feels really hard today. It's not that I've done something quote unquote wrong. It's just that this is the situation I found myself in today for this run. So then we need to go back to the systems, right? Of actually the day before a long run, perhaps I need to prioritize getting some sleep. Okay. I mean, that potentially is easier said than done, but at least the intention is there, or the thought process is there. Yeah. Oh man, so, being an adult.
Yeah. I'm going to say that, yes. Although I have been in my martyr for at least 50%, martyr wound, should we call it the wound rather than mine, because I don't want to own that shit. Okay.
Yeah.
I've been in a place of martyr wound for at least 50% of my weekend. So what am I going to do? Tell me what I am going to do to relieve myself. Please give me some solutions.
What would you do for your children, right? Like, we're going to first of all say, that sounds really hard that you've been in that place. Okay. And then the next thing maybe is to recognize that at some point you will come out of it.
Yeah.
It won't be like this forever.
I said that to my kids so often this weekend. And because I got that from you as well. This is something that will ease with the passing of time. And I say that to them all the time now.
Really annoying though, isn't it?
Oh, you're feeling sad. This is not a permanent state of affairs. So I'm feeling in my martyr, this is not a permanent state of affairs, and I'm going to feed the kids sausage rolls from Aldi for dinner, because it's
perfect.
Very easy.
Going to ease the load. And I think perhaps the other thing that we would say to our children now is, even if we don't really understand why you're feeling in the martyr wound right now, maybe the martyrdom or the anger or whatever it is that's coming up for you is a rational response to something that's gone on. You are not wrong, you are not bad, you are not being irrational, you just are being in that place right now.
Yep.
Have some tea. There you go. I want to take it away. I want to go, it's okay, no, you're fine. It's so it's hard, isn't it, sitting with negative feelings. I do think that's maybe part of this difficulty as well, this resistance, is that the world tells us you must not feel anything bad, right? We must avoid all suffering at all costs. And then the resistance is difficult because of that. And then we're going, now I'm wrong for feeling bad. Like, it's so difficult, isn't it? And you're like, oh, no, actually, the bottom line is, this is just human. It's human for you to feel this way right now.
Yeah. And it's not good or bad. That's the thing about emotions. It's sometimes hard to sit in the joy.
Yeah.
It's just hard to feel emotions because we have been programmed to not feel any.
Yeah.
Because they're inappropriate for modern society to see a woman who is in her
all
rage.
Emotions are irrational and inappropriate. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, it's not, I don't know, it's not in, what's the word that I just used? It's not appropriate to see a man in his sadness. it's not appropriate to see a child in their fear. Or actually, no, do you know what? It's probably the most acceptable to see a child in fear and the least acceptable to see a child in their joy.
Yes. Although then what happens is, oh, you're scared of that. There's nothing to be scared of. It's just a,
Taking it away. Like, that's just trying to take it
taking
away.
Taking it away. Yeah.
Or having
so
power.
Mm.
Yeah. I need to go back to a book, actually, that's just reminded me, called Emotional Agility. Susan David, Emotional Agility. I've lost it. That happens to me a lot, doesn't it? I've lent
it out. Yeah, you give out books. You haven't given that one to me, because that one sounds good.
Call out to any listeners who've got Emotional Agility by Susan David. If you could drop it off at my house, I'd really appreciate it. Oh, I don't know what I've done with that one.
I feel like I feel really uplifted by this conversation. You know, I'm the leader. It's okay to put some systems in place. Feelings are not irrational, they just are. And they will change. And self-forgiveness is going to be a whole lot more useful than self-flagellation.
Yep. Tick, tick, tick. Done. Suffering cured.
Suffering cured. Now it's school run time. Good luck to us. Do we feel emotionally ready for school run?
I definitely don't today, but I have my systems. I've got my sausage rolls and I know that I'm angry. So here we go.
That's enough. That's enough. I really celebrate you. I feel like that is enough right now.
That's enough.
Yes. Let's not. Why are we trying to force all of the bad feelings over and done with quickly enough? Okay, let's just identify them.
I'm going to do my best to not project this feeling onto my entire family this evening. Projection, I'm not going to ignore the feeling, but I'm not going to project it onto them.
Yeah. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
Massive difference.
I think that probably needs a further discussion at some point. Feelings, projection of feelings, and how to feel your feelings. Oh, you're really going to like that one.
Oh. No, do you know what? It's so funny. Like that when you said that, you know, when people, I said this on the podcast before, I'm not sure. You know, when you watch Countdown, and like the number round is happening, and I just my brain just goes it flatlines. Like, that's how I felt just then when you went, how to feel your feelings. My brain flatlined. It went, nope. What's that? This is why it's difficult for me. Why did I have so many children? Why am I on this journey? I can't do it. I don't know what feelings are.
I think it's just really interesting that from my perspective, you and I are just coming from these opposite scale ends of spectrum, trying to reach like quite a similar middle point of like, I'm feeling all the freaking feelings all of the time and everyone's going to feel them with me, and you're like, I'm not going to feel any of the feelings. I don't have don't need feelings. But both of us are trying to find this like sweet spot of middle like ground. How do I feel the feelings, like support my family with the feelings but not project the feelings.
Yeah, or as you said earlier on, get right in there and be like, well, let's all throw our toys out the pram and all just have a meltdown right this second. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Good podcast. Good chat. Should we stop?
That was good. Yeah. What should we do next time?